a call for a whole new architecture for understanding meaning. The main mission of this deep dive is exploring this concept called symbionymity.
Symbionymity, okay.
Exactly, and it's framed as a way to patch actual semantics fundamentals flaws. The focus shifts towards balance, polarity, complementarity, really, not just similarity.
And the sources we've got are, well, they're pretty fascinating. There are these highly conceptual diagrams trying to map it all out visually. Yeah. But also, crucially, there's a practical tool mentioned, the Lao AI Polarity Companion. It supposedly shows how these ideas actually play out when you're writing, say, an email or just taking notes.
Which is great because it grounds the theory. What's really striking is, you know, we're taught from a young age to think of words on a line. Similar words over here, opposite words way over there.
Right, like a spectrum.
Exactly. But this material just kind of shatters that linear view. It forces you, the listener, to think about meaning not as a single point, but as a space defined by two necessary poles.
Okay, so let's dig into that. Where does the traditional model start to break down?
We usually rely on simple ideas, right? Like very for a strong synonym, equal for just similarity, non for an opposite.
Uh-huh. Those are the basics, and the critique starts right there with equal.
How so?
Well, the sources argue that focusing just on equal similarity is actually vague. It's not fundamental enough. If you're only looking for what's similar, you miss out on, well, on depth and potential expansion. It's a safe, maybe, but limiting.
Okay, so if that similarity focus is vague, what's the alternative they propose? This is where it gets really interesting. The proposal suggests reframing equal. Instead of just similar, it should mean something more like related to U.S.
Related to U.S.
Meaning related to the task at hand or the specific frame of reference you're working within or even just its current usefulness. It shifts the focus from some objective dictionary definition to a much more subjective task-oriented one.
Wow, okay. That's a significant shift. And does this apply to opposites too?
It absolutely does. The material makes a strong point that opposites are very much related.
Which sounds counterintuitive at first glance.
It does, but think about it. Why are they related? Because by showing you the two extremes, the two poles, they instantly map out the entire conceptual range of an idea.
Ah, okay. Like knowing hot and cold defines the whole range of temperature.
Precisely. That range is vital. The sources even mention it helps in avoiding dangers. Knowing the extremes gives you clear boundaries.
So the traditional thesaurus, just giving lists, isn't enough then. The sources point to a specific flaw. Something about ranking.
Yeah, exactly. A key technical flaw they identify is the lack of a meaningful, maybe centralized or decentralized, ranking system for synonyms and antonyms. The thesaurus points you towards the dictionary, maybe, but doesn't really rank the relationships within that list.
So how do we fix that? How do we get that depth and structure?
The proposed solution involves integrating relationships we kind of know about, but often treat separately. Things like hypernyms, the general category, like animal.
Okay.
Hypronyms, the specific type, like dog. Holonyms, the whole thing, like bicycle.
Got it.
And meronyms, the parts, like wheel. The big question then becomes, how much does any suggested word relationship actually reveal what's hidden? How much does it improve your meronymity?
Meronymity, that sense of the part-whole connection. You need to see how the word fits into the bigger structure.
Exactly. You need the whole network.
Okay, so if the problem is this linear thinking and the need is for structure, that leads us straight to the proposed solution. Symbionymity. What exactly is it? And why this emphasis on complementarity?
Right. Symbionymity is presented as the key framework, the patch. It exists right at the intersection of similarity, yes, but also the complementary opposite and the whole spectrum connecting them. It's fundamentally about synchrony, it asks. What other word does this word need to complete the whole semantic field? It's not just about likeness. It's about completion. Partnership, almost.
Partnership between words. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And within this idea, there's this other term that sounds, well, pretty dense. Intensonyms.
Aha, yes. Intensonyms. The definition given is synonyms that are also fractal hypernyms, hyponyms at the same time.
Right. That's a lot. Can we break that down? Fractal hyponym synonyms?
Let's try. Think of it maybe like those Russian nesting dolls, but made of meaning. These are synonyms that don't just share a basic definition. They are conceptually nested within each other in terms of complexity or scope or maybe context. They show this quality of intensonymity.
Okay, nesting dolls of meaning. The example given was simple, stable system. How does that fit?
Well, think about it. They're related, right? Synonymous in a broad sense. But a system often needs to be stable to function, and stability might rely on underlying simplicity. Each word is kind of a necessary nested component for the others. They build on each other.
I see. So nesting, that depth, that's the fractality.
That seems to be the idea, yes. That's the level of fractality or intensinimity. And connecting this back to the bigger picture, symbionimity isn't static. It's supposed to create conceptual drive. The sources call it momentum. This momentum naturally leads you towards thinking about polarities and opposites. You're not just defining a word, you're mapping the conceptual motion of an idea.
Conceptual motion. I like that.
Yeah.
The theory sounds compelling, definitely thought-provoking. But how do we actually use this? How do we apply this idea of seeking complementarity and balance in our everyday communication?
And that's where the Lao AI Polarity Companion comes back in. It's meant to be the practical tool for this kind of systemic thinking. The core idea seems inspired by Laozi, that philosophy of balance. If you write something that strongly represents one side, one pole of an idea,
Which we often do, right? We take a stance.
exactly, the tool then gently prompts you, invites you, to consider and maybe cover the complementary side, the side you might be neglecting, perhaps unintentionally.
I like that phrasing, gently invited to balance yourself. It's not forcing you, but suggesting there's more to the picture, feels like.
Well, it acknowledges that every strong idea probably has an inherent tension, a necessary pair.
And that true understanding, or maybe robust communication, comes from acknowledging both sides. You mentioned your own writing tendency.
Yeah, I definitely lean towards the abstract sometimes, the big picture, the theory, and maybe I forget the concrete grounding.
And that's a perfect example of why understanding these fundamental semantic polarities is so useful. This framework helps you see where symbionimity is hiding, where balance is needed. Let's look at a couple of key pairs they highlight. Your example first, abstract and concrete.
Okay, so if I start abstract, say, explaining a complex theory, the complementary move, the symbionimity move, is to immediately ground it. Provide a small, vivid, concrete example, like your GPS example for relativity, perfect.
Right, so the abstract gives the reach, the transferability.
Exactly, it transfers across cases. But the concrete provides the grounding, the traction, the proof you need both for clarity and making the idea stick. If it's only abstract, it just floats away, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, what's another key pair that defines this? Conceptual motion.
Past and future. This one is all about making that momentum visible.
How so?
The recommendation is, whenever possible, tie a historical anchor at the past precedent, where the idea came from, to at least one tangible future projection or next step.
Ah, so you show the trajectory, where it's been, where it's potentially going.
Precisely. And that link is the momentum in this context. It makes the idea feel alive and moving.
That makes sense. There were other pairs mentioned too, right? More about tone or structure.
Yes, things like formal and informal. The idea is maybe add a crisp formal definition within a mostly informal note, or conversely, a friendly informal aside within a very formal piece of writing. Balance the tone.
And hard and soft. That sounds intriguing.
That's about pairing, say, facts and constraints, the hard data, with values and nuance, the soft interpretation or implication. Recognizing that a number, a metric, isn't just data, it often represents a value choice. And that value choice is still constrained by the hard facts. It's about integrating both.
Okay, integrating facts and values. And what about similar and different? How does balancing those help?
This is crucial for learning, apparently, if you've just spent a lot of time arguing how two things are similar.
Which we do all the time when explaining concepts.
Right, the symbionimity hint is,
All right.
now add one clear, concrete difference, just one. Why? It prevents what they call category blur.
Category blurred, like merging the two concepts too much in your mind.
Exactly. That single point of difference keeps them distinct enough that you can apply the knowledge more effectively in new situations. It sharpens your understanding and boosts transfer learning.
Fascinating. So, this framework really pushes for dynamic thinking, constantly checking for the other side. Now, we know why we might pair concepts, but are there different types of these symbionyms? Section 4 mentions a typology.
Yes, the types seem related to how polarity is handled. The most straightforward is formal symbionimity. That's just adding one of those fundamental polarities we discussed, like abstract concrete or past future.
Okay, the basic pairs.
Then there's custom symbionimity. This sounds like adding complementary polarities that are maybe less obvious, the ones you weren't expecting. They call these leftover polarities, sometimes described as super, or even Foxy Holen imply something clever or tricky, perhaps.
Foxy Holen. Mm. Interesting term. And the third type, it sounded quite powerful.
Ah, yes. The oxymoron.
Right, like bittersweet or organized chaos.
Exactly. The sources describe the oxymoron as the quickest and broader space provider. It's like a linguistic shortcut. It slams two highly complementary, often opposing poles together into one phrase.
And that maximizes the semantic space instantly.
That's the idea. It defines a huge emotional or conceptual range in just two words. Think deafening silence or painfully good.
Yeah.
You immediately grasp the complex territory it covers.
That makes total sense. So if this is all about pairs and complementarity, what does it mean for how we should think about communicating knowledge? We're always told to optimize for keywords.
Right. But this framework suggests maybe that's not the most effective way. Much symbionimity implies we should be focusing on key pairs. These are presented explicitly as ideal conjunctions, better than keywords.
Key pairs, better than keywords. Why?
Because the key pair holds that nested fractal depth we talked about with intensinims. Focusing on two complementary ideas together is potentially much more effective for learning, for memory, for communication, than just hammering on isolated single concepts. The pair contains the tension, the momentum.
Okay, can you give an example that really shows why a pair might be better than just finding the perfect keyword, or even just the direct opposite?
Sure. Let's think about communication in a dynamic situation, like a negotiation, or even the example used in the sources, a fast-paced words game.
So?
You could just shout the exact antonym to whatever word someone just played. That's simple opposition. But is it effective opposition? Does it contribute strategically?
So, like, if someone says peace, just yelling war is opposition, but maybe not smart opposition, not necessarily symbionimity.
Exactly. It might be too predictable, too linear. The specific example given is quite provocative. Someone replies Hitler to the word peace.
Wow, that's extreme opposition.
Extremely. But the point made is that this player likely only makes that move if the context built up over the previous turns, the non-opposing complementary words played earlier, has created a situation where Hitler becomes strategically complementary to the entire game moment.
Ah, so it's not just reacting to peace in isolation. It's leveraging the whole network of meanings already established in the game.
Precisely. It leverages the existing network to inject critical, perhaps game-changing, polarity. It shows that the effectiveness of any opposition depends heavily on the surrounding context, on the overall complementarity of the whole exchange.